The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
Fantasy, you're in the home 6010. Fantasy Focus. Fantasy Focus.
Welcome to the Fantasy Focus Football Podcast post-draft special. That's right, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay season is over. Although Mel's beautiful hair is actually on TV right now. Field Yates, Matthew Berry, Mike Clay, Stefania Bell, a full house here. Daniel, Kyle, and Keith also behind the glass. We've got a surprise. I don't know if it's a surprise. A surprise to some that we'll discuss a little bit later on in the show.
If you thought you might have seen me this weekend, we'll discuss.
Right. I was in Nashville. Stefania and Mike were in Connecticut over the weekend. Matthew was in parts unknown. We'll get to that a little bit later on.
I thought that was you DJing that bat mitzvah that I was at this weekend, Matthew. I wasn't sure, but then I was like, yep, the way that he played.
What kind of set list does he bring?
Well, he started with Baby Got Back, which was not surprising to me. But then.
Because Baby does.
Right. But then, this is where it went weird. He went to this Margaritaville. And then every song after that was nothing but
my strategy as a DJ is good bands you have heard of. It's the complete antithesis of what Daniel does, which is crappy bands you've never heard of. And so, because people, you want people out there dancing, you want them having a good time. I am a great DJ. Please invite me to your next bar, bat mitzvah, wedding, or other special event.
Played Pour Some Sugar on Me twice back to back. That's how much the ants were really digging that one.
The ants really loved
that one.
Okay, got it. What calls for a back-to-back playing of songs?
I know people were wondering, oh my God, I wonder if it's been a while since they've done a podcast, will they be off their game? And Daniel, I think, quickly answering that question, yes.
Rewind. Fantasy news from the National Football League.
This is the instant replay.
All right, so obviously we've got a ton to get to. 264 selections over the weekend. Some of them fantasy relevant. Many of them are not. But let's begin right at the top. We're going to go by position, and we're going to go by where they were drafted in the order. Right. Starting Arizona, Kyler Murray, number one overall pick in this year's draft. Heisman Trophy winner, Oklahoma. You know all the accolades. Mike Clay, I kick it off with you.
We should just real quickly, if we can, if you don't mind, set Mike up, because I just want to say, Mike does all of our dynasty stuff. He does all the write-ups on the player. You did a great job, and I would encourage everyone to check it out on ESPN.com. He did a live blog during the NFL draft. Mike, yourself, myself, Stefania, Daniel, and Statapillar we were not part of the ESPN's NFL draft coverage. We were not part of it. So, we did our own little thing there. So you can check those things out on my Twitter or Instagram. Mike, you've studied all the tape of all these guys. You actually did a ranking of these rookies before they got drafted as well. So you're you're our dynasty guy. You're our dynasty guru, if you will. So I think it makes sense. It's one of the reasons you're here on the podcast today to sort of help us out with all
this. I erred in mentioning that Mike does a great job with his breakdown of these players. Obviously now it becomes a projection that has a bit more clarity, mm-hmm. Mike, as we know which teams they are playing for. Let's talk about Kyler Murray, potential redraft value this season. Also, we can note that they drafted a bunch of wide receivers in Arizona over the past 3 days.
Yeah, no question. This offense is going to look a little bit different, I would say, in 2019 than it did last year. But, you know, this is a tough line to walk, right? Because we do expect Murray to be the starter in week one, but will that lead to a lot of fantasy value? Consider over the past decade, there have only been six top 14 fantasy quarterbacks as rookies, which is incredible, but they all did a lot with their legs. I think Murray can be one of those guys. Last season had over 1,000 rushing yards at Oklahoma, also averaged 11.6 yards per attempt passing, which I don't think we talk about enough. That's an FBS record, an all-time record. The guy could throw it well, he could run it well. So, you know, that leads me to my projection. Assuming he takes most of the snaps for that team this season, I have him a little under 3,800 passing yards, 23 passing touchdowns, 538 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns. That would make him a fringe top 12 fantasy quarterback and certainly would bring him value here in 2019.
If anything stands out there, Matthew, to me, it's the lack of rush. 523 is a lot of yards, but it maybe still feels a little bit light for a guy that was the most dynamic player in college football last year.
Josh Allen, I think, over the second half of the season last year had almost 500 yards rushing, and he's a much more accurate thrower than Josh Allen. I think we all know about the rushing. You've seen sort of the scramble highlights from college. This is a guy that completed passes about 67% in college. Like, he was very, very accurate in that same system that Baker Mayfield was prior to him. And so you think about last year where Josh Allen was the number one quarterback in fantasy there for a time in the second half of the year. Baker Mayfield was a top 10 fantasy quarterback once Freddie Kitchens took over. Lamar Jackson had fantasy value. So we've seen, especially when quarterbacks are mobile, they can have fantasy value. And then you think about this, what should be a fantasy-friendly offense under Cliff Kingsbury. We know they're going to throw. They added some talent here. We'll get into the sort of the receivers they added to Larry Fitzgerald, Christian Kirk, and of course David Johnson. And then you think about this defense field. Like, it's not a great defense. There's going to be some junk time here for Kyler Murray. So he's definitely someone I think needs to be drafted sort of in late rounds with an upside here. And it would not surprise me over the second half of the year, once Kyler Murray sort of gets up to speed in the NFL, we're talking about him as a viable starter in standard 10-team fantasy leagues.
I'm going to make this really easy. Lamar Jackson last year was an excellent fantasy quarterback, or at least a borderline top 10 quarterback for a good chunk of this season. Mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson could not throw the football last year. Kyler
Correct.
Murray is every bit the athlete that Lamar Jackson is with an actual arm.
Correct.
So the potential for top 12, as Mike forecast in his projections, not that outlandish. Here are the three wide receivers they drafted. Andy Isabella, he played at UMass in the second round. Hakeem Butler out of Iowa State in the fourth round. The draft Twitter community felt like that was a steal. And then Keyshawn Johnson in the sixth round. Any of those guys stand out as having the potential to be something as a rookie?
I think so. I'm keeping an eye on Isabella, right? He's super intriguing. We saw at the Senior Bowl he played in the slot, but we saw in college he could play outside. He has kind of that Brandon Cooks deep speed, but he could work inside too. So the guy can really do it all. He's shifty, fast, and versatile. So for me, he's the top guy of the rookies. He was obviously the first guy drafted, but you also have Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk there as well. So it might take some time. You know, it's tough for rookies to make a huge impact in fantasy. So late round flyer in Isabella, maybe Butler, probably not Johnson, but you know, I'm not getting too excited. It's not like they're every damn players immediately.
Yeah, I think with the majority of these players, especially at the wide receiver position, this is more dynasty talk than it is redraft talk. They're nothing more than sort of late round flyers, names to keep in mind. But for me, what's exciting about this is just whether it's Isabella, whether it's Butler, whether it's some combination, there's some talent on the field in Arizona, whereas, you know, a year ago it was looking sort of bleak, but we saw some nice moments from Christian Kirk last year. Obviously, we have high expectations for another year of Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson. And so whether it's Isabella Butler or some sort of combination, there's going to be guys for Kyler Murray to throw to.
When they were losing badly last year, which they might lose badly in some games this year, it was when they were throwing to the likes of Ricky Seals-Jones and Chad Williams and players literally signed off the street earlier on in the season. It's nice to see that this offense at least has some potential based off how they drafted over the weekend. Kyler Murray is in. Josh Rosen is out. So just quickly, obviously he was traded to the Miami Dolphins. Second round pick going back to Arizona. That became Andy Isabella. Josh Rosen, carry any fantasy value in Miami?
Can we talk for 1 second, though, about how badly Arizona bungled this from their front? I think they would have gotten, and you never know, you don't know what those conversations are, but it just feels like the heat on Josh Rosen, the ability to get a first rounder for her, or first round for him, or a second rounder, or something like that, or more for him than what they ended up getting, had they dealt him before taking Kyler Murray number one.
I think that they should have. What they should have done, and this is not hindsight, this is what I said, and I think many others believed as well, is if they had made their intentions clear with Kyler in like mid-March, which is still 6 weeks out, I get it. You're revealing your hands, and teams say, well, I'm not going to bend over backwards because you're taking Kyler. Well, at least you have a chance as an opposing team to think about your offer more thoughtfully. When you're getting a 10 or 12-minute window on the clock to negotiate a trade, there's a lot of gravity behind those trades. So I think you're right. They may have fetched a better package if they had tried to trade him to Miami in April, early April, or late March.
Especially because once the draft happens and you see Daniel Jones go to the Giants, and we talk about that pick in a second, but the Giants got who they wanted, and the Redskins, Haskins fell to them at 15. So all of a sudden, you're out of markets. Like, even if you only want to send him to Miami, you could say to Miami, well, we've got these offers from the Giants and the Redskins, and so you need to up your offer if you want Rosen. And once Haskins and Jones fall, the Dolphins know, like, no, you don't. It's us or nobody.
I just don't think they ever had leverage. I mean, they knew as soon as they started conversations, you knew they were taking Murray. As soon as they called a team, you knew why they were calling.
But my point is that before the draft, there's a couple of quarterback needy teams that they could have played against each other. Once the draft happens, and again, Jones and Haskins fall where they do, suddenly the window of where you can shop them is much more narrow.
By the way, really fun to go back and search Steve Keim comments about Josh Rosen at this time last year following the draft.
Right.
Mike, just really briefly, because I think we all know the answer. answer. Josh Rosen, who isn't necessarily the starter of Miami, hard to imagine any redraft value at this point.
Absolutely not. I have him at 19 passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown, 160 yards, which is, you know, he's not going to do a ton with this. Like, it's not there right now. The skill guys there in Miami are not very good either. Supporting cast isn't good. They have a long way to go with that team.
This will tell you everything you need to know. When you said, I have him at 19, and before you said touchdowns, I was just like, that's really high. I can't believe you're ranking Rosen at 19.
No, he comes at 28 in fantasy.
There you go. That makes more sense to me. I was just like, you're ranking him as a top 20 guy? What are you seeing in Rosen that I'm not? I think it's a nice move by Miami, and I think their front office and coaching staff did a really nice job with the draft. They've got a lot of holes to fill, and it's going to be a process, but they're on their way. I thought it was a great trade for Josh Rosen.
You know what? We don't have the time right now, but I actually think it was too steep of a price for Miami to pay. And I'll explain to you off camera, and if we want to talk about it at a future date, we can.
Okay.
But the other quarterbacks that were drafted this year that at least profile as potential starters within the next 18 months or so, Daniel Jones of the Giants, 6 overall, Dwayne Haskins to the Redskins, and then Drew Locke, he goes to the Broncos at 42. John Elway says that Joe Flacco is just entering the prime of his career, so perhaps Drew Locke will have to wait. Let's sort of dismiss those. I don't think any of us believe that any of those players are surefire redraft candidates, but taking a bigger, more macro scope of these quarterbacks, and we'll start with you, Mike. If you had to just rank these guys, a lot of information we need to get on these players and actually see them in an NFL uniform, but just give us a quick rundown of your top 7 or so rookie quarterbacks from a dynasty rankings perspective.
Yeah, we can make this quick. Murray's 1 for sure. Haskins is 2. I liked him more than Jones coming into the draft, so no problems there with Washington, obviously. Daniel Jones comes in at 3, adds some value with his legs.
Yep.
That helps out. Drew Locke is 4 out there in Denver, probably going to start at some point this season. Will Greer comes in at 5. Jarrett Stidham goes to the Patriots, so he comes in next. Ryan Finley there in Cincinnati, Garrett Minshew and Easton Stick. So, you really just focus on those top couple of guys in dynasty.
Those first few guys, that's a massive drop.
So I have a very different owner. You're much higher on Daniel Jones than I am, even from a dynasty perspective. I mean, not anyone that's impressive to me. I know he has his fans there, but I have Haskins. I have Murray at 1. I have Haskins at 2, obviously. And we'll talk about Haskins in a little bit. The concern on Haskins is I think he's going to be a very good NFL quarterback. Fantasy-wise, he just doesn't run. And the way the team is being built at the moment is they want to go more run-heavy and more defensive. And so it's hard to see Haskins having the kind of passing volume you need to sort of get up there as a starter. But I loved him as a pick for my Redskins here. I actually think Will Greer would be number 3 for me. I don't know how much longer Cam Newton has, but I like going to a system there where you've got Norv Turner, where you've got some young weapons around. You think about, some of the wide receivers they have there, obviously McCaffrey, right, and DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel. So some nice pieces around him. And Cam Newton just gets so beat up. You know, the concern is when does Will Greer get a shot? But would it shock you if Will Greer is the starting quarterback in 2 or 3 years? That if Cam Newton takes another couple of big hits that, like, you know, has another big injury that Cam just decides to, you know.
I feel like it's either Cam plays like 6 more years or Cam is replaced by 2020. And I don't mean replaced like because of a better player, but like the injuries take a toll on him.
I mean, and by the way, he's been hit by more times than any quarterback in the NFL since he entered the league.
Cam Newton doesn't turn 30 for another 2 weeks. Just to say like how young he is, but everyone feels like his body, he's had so much wear and tear on that body.
So much wear and tear. And so at some point, you know, the quality of life conversations come into it. And then I think I would have Locke and then finally for me, Stidham. Like, if you're in the Patriots system, like, who knows who the heir apparent is to Tom Brady? Maybe it's Stidham. Maybe it's Jacoby Brissett, who's a free agent after this year. Maybe it's somebody that we don't know about. But if you've got a shot at being the Patriots' starting quarterback, to me, that's worth it more than Daniel Jones.
Yeah, if you breathe that air in New England, you've got a shot eventually to become a good developmental player. Let's go to the running backs.
Before you do that, I'm doing a Matthew thing right here. Can I ask one question? In a dynasty league or more like in a rookie draft, a lot of times you look at running backs or wide receivers that go first overall. I just want to ask Mike, in a rookie-only draft, is Kyler Murray a quarterback the number 1 pick for you, or do you believe that Josh Jacobs or one of these other guys we're going to talk about should go first?
Oh, no way. Murray's late first round pick.
Late first
round? I'm not going
to
take a quarterback that early. They're just not important enough, you know? So there's just the value of the other positions.
Unless it was a super flex league or two quarterback league, in which, from that standpoint, Kyler Murray's to me 101.
In a super flex, I'm fine with that. But I still think I might lean toward Jacobs, but he's up there for sure.
I'll just say this very quickly. And generally speaking, in dynasty leagues or keeper leagues, I prefer wide receivers over running backs because they keep their value longer.
Sure.
Let's get to running backs then, because I think in terms of redraft leagues, no rookie position has a better chance of hitting than running backs. And the Raiders had 3 first-round picks. They used the second of those 3 on Josh Jacobs out of Alabama, who was regarded by almost everybody as the number one running back coming into this year's draft. If not for the fact that he ran a pedestrian 40 time, he might have been drafted well before pick 24. Mike, I have a hard time finding a hole in his game.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I like him a lot. You know, short term, I think you're going to still see Jalen Richard busy in passing situations because he really excelled in that area last year. But that doesn't mean Jacobs can't do it, right? He has that in his arsenal. He can catch the football. He can pass ball. No question. He has good size. Yeah. He can be a goal line back. He can be a workhorse on early down. So coming out this season, I have him at 226 carries, a little under 1,000 yards, 8 total touchdowns, 350 receiving yards. That's enough to make him a fringe top 20 running back, and I feel comfortable drafting him anywhere in that 15 to 20 range. I think he'll play a huge role right out of the gate.
You think about this Oakland Raiders offense field. Last year, in a lost season, right, for the Raiders, they were still 6th in red zone rush percentage last season. When they got in close, they ran the ball here. Before he retired, before he went on injured reserve, first 6 weeks of the season last year, Marshawn Lynch was a top 14 fantasy running back on the same Raiders team. And we expect this offense to be better with the addition of Antonio Brown, with the addition of Tyrell Williams, right? And Josh Jacobs, right? I mean, suddenly they've got some pieces there. And so you expect it to be a more efficient offense that's in scoring position, more offense. 75% of their running back rushing yards from 2018 were Doug Martin and Marshawn Lynch. They're no longer there. Josh Jacobs is going to get a full workload. The only disappointing thing about this is Isaiah Crowell, who I have in a dynasty league, his fantasy value just died.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought you were going to say that maybe Isaiah Crowell is there. I'm like, I don't know if Isaiah Crowell will even make this roster in Oakland anymore.
This year's Carlos Hyde, right? Remember Hyde signed with the Browns and then immediately got passed by Chubb. Same kind of thing.
Listen, if he does get cut, that'd probably be good for his fantasy value. My guess is that it was a 1-year deal. It probably isn't that much. They need some depth there behind Richard.
We'll see.
Maybe they'll keep him around, but no fantasy value other than as a handcuff to Jacobs at the moment.
Way, everybody, go pour one out for the great Marshawn Lynch in his second retirement, and we believe his final retirement. The Eagles snagged the second running back off the board, Miles Sanders, who he was a backup for the first, 3 years at Penn State. Here's the good news. He was backing up Saquon Barkley, so there's no shame in being a backup there. Entered Penn State as the number one recruit by many services at running back in the country. So the guy's got some obvious talent, and Mike, I'm not saying this because you're an Eagles fan, but this guy just checks a lot of the boxes they need right now.
Yeah, he does. He struggles with fumbles. That's kind of the knock. You know, you see the reports say he kicks it outside too much, won't get downhill, but that's okay in this offense, right? He's a perfect complement. I wasn't as high as some others on him, but you know, you like the speed, obviously ran under a 4 or 5, but he is such a good complement here for Jordan Howard, who they can use on early downs and at the goal line in short yardage and take that beating on 8 to 12 carries a game, maybe at the most.
Right.
Whereas Sanders is more, you know, of a versatile guy, an athletic guy that can kick it outside, use his speed to make big plays, and also is a much better pass catcher than Jordan Howard. So I love this 1-2 punch, and I think that's how it'll work its way out. I know Corey Clement, Wendell Smallwood, and Boston Scott, and Josh Adams are on this roster, but I think it's going to be a two-headed attack, I should say, for the 2019 season.
Ever since Doug Peterson got to Philadelphia, he has done nothing but employ a running back by committee. I forget exactly what the stat is. Thirsty Kyle, you had the stat. I don't know if you can find it. You're not on a mic. We're in a different studio, so you're not on a mic. But there was some stat about that there's been a running back has had more than 14 touches only 5 times under Doug Peterson. I'm making that stat up, but it is something like that. Whatever. It's a bunch of numbers that tell you what you know if you watch Eagles games, which is it's a running back by committee. And you just mentioned all those names. We've seen all those guys, not to mention Jay Ajayi and some of the other guys that have been there in Eagles uniforms. So I think it certainly hurts Jordan Howard's fantasy value. It's a nice landing spot for Sanders, who probably wasn't going to be an every down back no matter where he landed in the NFL. So now he goes to an offense that's highly efficient, that's going to be in scoring position a lot. I hate to say this because Mike is an Eagles fan and I hate them, but look, it's a very good offense. It's a very good offensive line.
Great offense.
They're loaded. It is a very good offense, and he is a very viable flex play in PPR leagues immediately out of the gate. And I do think, but Howard will still be sort of the goal line back here, and where this hurts his value somewhat you know, I think Jordan Howard is still a top 20 running back here. Remember, Eagles eighth in red zone rush percentage last season.
Wow, top 20.
I think it's a little bit rich for Howard.
You don't think Jordan Howard's a top 20 guy?
No, I'd say fringe flex in non-PPR. No target. He's going to get very few targets, not enough carries.
The interesting part is the way that he becomes a top 20 back is if this offense hums like it did two seasons ago when LeGarrette Blount was all he did was score touchdowns, right? So like if Jordan Howard gets, he could get
10 touchdowns, sure.
Right.
Yeah, that's my argument. I think it's going to be, I was just about to say, like if Jordan Howard gets 8 to 10 touchdowns this year, does that shock anyone? I don't think it should.
I have them at 6 each just for all intents and purposes.
Well, why do you hate Jordan Howard? Why do you hate Jordan Howard?
Because Miles Sanders is taking control.
You saying, just to clarify there, Mike, are you saying 6 rushing touchdowns or 6 total touchdowns?
Where does, 6 total for each if you had, if you had rushing to, receiving.
I don't have a computer in front of me, so I don't know it off the top of my head. How many touchdowns did Jordan Howard have last year and where did he finish in total fantasy points?
Kyle is looking that up now.
Yeah, while he looks that up, the Eagles do score a lot of their touchdowns through the air during the Peterson era, too. So that's something else to keep in mind here. No, I went throwing 32.
Yeah, it's a pass-first offense. There's no question about that. But still, it'd be interesting to say. Like, I think if you could, they're different players and it's a different offense. But if you think about Jordan Howard in Chicago last year and Miles Sanders and sort of the Tre Cohen role, again, very different players, different offense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But just in terms of a thunder-lightning sort of thing.
Yeah.
Last year, Jordan Howard finished as running back 20 with 9 rushing touchdowns.
There you go. However, the formula for him to repeat it this year.
With less volume, but sure. It's possible. I mean, I think that's a
ceiling. He went back and forth. He went up and down.
I think that's
last year.
So let's go to Los Angeles next, where the Rams already have.
I love Jordan.
So the Rams already have Todd Gurley, Malcolm Brown, and the guy John Kelly. People actually liked this past preseason, never really made his mark. That being said, they took Darrell Henderson out of Memphis. You want to look at some crazy, ridiculous numbers. Nearly 9 yards per carry.
Is that a lot?
Henderson
that sounds like
over
a lot.
The past two seasons. The guy was second best player in Memphis history behind only D'Angelo Williams. Mike, production off the charts. Not a big guy, 5'8 or so, but a player who played bigger than his stature and had a lot of pre-draft buzz.
Yeah, small, decent speed. And by the way, that yards per carry stuff, I mean, he averaged 8.88 yards per carry in 2017 and actually increased it to 8.92 last season. So I don't know that it's necessarily a fluke. Now, he won't do that in the pros, but that just suggests he's a very efficient, effective back. Guys, my problem here is just volume. I think if Todd Gurley is healthy and ready to go, and I know Stefania will touch on this, it's going to be hard for him to get on the field. I do not think that they're going to say, all right, we're going to give him 15 touches a game. I think Gurley will be a 22 to 25 touch player if he's healthy, but you know, we'll see how it plays out. At the very least, he's a terrific handcuff.
So I'm going to get, can I get Stefania's quick insight on the Gurley thing? Because the minute this pick was submitted, I had people from the NFL reaching out to me saying, we sure the Rams aren't that nervous about Todd Gurley?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I think that, they should be. Like, it's a bunch of red flags here because they did two things, right? Not only did they draft Darrell Henderson, they traded up in the third round to go get him, but they also matched Detroit's offer for Malcolm Brown to bring him back. And they saved Malcolm Brown, right? They saved Malcolm Brown from a life of Detroit.
You know,
so they really did that.
I just spent the weekend in Detroit at one of my very best friends in the world, Jason's wedding. Congratulations to you, Mackenzie. Detroit is on the way up. I am telling you that with a fact.
Yeah, 100%.
And they've got great beer.
It is mm-hmm. the kind of place to spend a weekend in. Hey, Stefania, let's talk about Todd Gurley, and your concerns here. Are we reading this right with the drafting of Darrell Henderson that this might be a red flag on Todd?
Well, it sounds like Sean McVay is making the case that he just was looking for a change of pace back, and this has nothing to do with Gurley, but I find that really hard to believe. Based on the fact that it's just natural to look at what happened with Todd Gurley last year and be concerned about how much workload he can continue to maintain and still stay healthy. So just to recap Todd Gurley, he had that ACL reconstruction coming into the 2015 draft. And pretty soon after he got into the NFL, he lit it up. I mean, obviously he has done well. He's had no re-injury to the ACL. And we really haven't seen any ill effects until this last year when he ended up missing the last two regular season games. And I would point out that he still had 73% of the running back snaps, even with missing two games in the end of the regular season. The team has to adjust. It's interesting because if you hear McVay say that they have a plan to manage his health going forward, but then also say that he's the focal point of their offense and that's not going to change, I just don't think those two things necessarily go together. The Rams do not play their starters in the preseason. We know that. So usually I will say, look to the preseason, look what they're doing. Yeah. But you're not going to get that clue from the Rams in the preseason. When Todd Gurley showed up for the April workouts talking to reporters, his words were that he was feeling, quote, pretty good and taking his recovery day by day. That does not sound like a guy who's totally got this in the past. And by the way, I want to point out, I don't think that's a negative. I think if you're being smart, the Rams have a track record right now of an amazing, as far as their health and medical, they have one of the lowest rates of having players on the injury report in the NFL, if not the lowest. They have a way of managing their players to keep them on the field. I think Todd Gurley is going to go into that plan, and I don't buy that he's going to maintain the same volume of work, and I think that starts week one.
By the way, there are only three things in life that are guaranteed: death, taxes, and Stefania mentioned how the Rams don't play their starters in the preseason. Guaranteed, 100%, take it to the bank. Stefania will be at the Rams-Cowboys preseason game in Hawaii this year. She will find a tie to ensure that she makes it to the
great
state.
It's important because you can really only evaluate these things up close.
Oh, my boondoggle. That is the Super Bowl of boondoggling right there. That preseason game in Hawaii is literally the Super Bowl of boondoggling. Why don't we do a live show there, Secret Squirrel?
I would love to.
Why don't we do the 06010 live in Hawaii?
Those are my old stomping grounds. I would love to do that.
100%.
We have a Disney resort out there.
100%.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what,
Mike.
I'll see what it is that I can do. I do want to say this. Can I say something?
Sure.
I asked Kyle to help me with this stat. I sent it out earlier this week over Twitter, but if you look at what Todd Gurley did last year in his points per touch, and you said, let's take away a third of his touches this year.
Okay.
He still would have finished as RB8 this last season.
Yeah, he was tremendous.
So,
yeah,
he's very good. Super efficient, even if you take away a third of his touches here to Henderson, but he's just not that top three,
Here's
top five guy.
Can he keep the
top by the way,
going?
He was super efficient if you're looking at the whole season, but how do you remember him in the last three or four games that they played? And so I think you can't do across the season for him. You have to look at what happened late. And I think, you know, they talked about the fact that they weren't using him correctly. I think part of it was adjusting to how do we use Todd Gurley in a different role? I'm not saying he's not going to be their lead back or their feature back. I just don't think he can do what he did before.
And one thing I will say this, if you go back to the conversation we had with Les Snead at the combine, and we aired that interview on this podcast, but if you missed it or if you don't remember, one of the things that Les said said to us was, while they want to like be smart about him because they obviously have Super Bowl aspirations and they want to limit his touches, it's what touches they limit that's important. He says, like, does that mean they limit his touches in the red zone? Probably not. The guy has a nose for the red zone. You know, and so, like, if he gets five less touches a game, but he's still scoring the amount of touchdowns, you're not going to care. But to me, this definitely knocks Todd Gurley down a few spots. He's still a first rounder. He's still one of the, you know, top running backs off the draft board. But for me, the concern is not only is there an injury concern, but now who you handcuff him with becomes a bit of a question. Because again, Malcolm Brown played really well in limited time for him last year, and they made a point of going out and matching the offer of Detroit to make sure Malcolm Brown came back.
Yeah, and it wasn't a monster offer, but it was still, you know, it was $3.2 million bucks over two years, and they made that decision.
I mean, they had John Kelly, they drafted Daryl Henderson, and they're paying money to Malcolm Brown,
They got bodies there. Let's keep it rolling here. So we've got a bunch of names to fire through. David Montgomery of Iowa State was the first player the Bears drafted. They moved up in the order in the third round and actually mortgaged a 2020 pick to get Montgomery. This is a guy who had crazy production at Iowa State. Patient runner, big. Mike, the lack of speed is apparent, but the role, like, you're either a Mike Davis believer or not, and if you're not, this felt like one of the juiciest landing spots for a running back in the draft.
Yeah, Davis wasn't too efficient remember, he was cut and bounced around the league until last season when he kind of emerged in a very good running offense. Nonetheless, I love the landing spot here for Montgomery, and I love the player, too. He was number two on my board coming into the draft. Super elusive, and, you know, focusing just on field, it's hard not to see the connections to Kareem Hunt here. He's has terrific size. They're built similarly. He's not great in the 40, as you mentioned. He ran a 4.6, but he is insanely elusive. He just in terms of breaking tackles, eluding tacklers, he stands out way above everyone else. And that's an area, again, where Hunt was very good. Not to mention the head coach here is Matt Nagy, who coached Hunt for a year in Kansas City. So the connections are really overwhelming. I know Tariq Combs is going to be plenty involved, maybe a little Mike Davis, but I love the landing spot for Montgomery. Would not surprise me at all if he ends up top 20 as a rookie.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially when you think about the Bears. Sixth heaviest run offense in the NFL last season, ninth in yards per carry before first contact. Some of that's Trubisky inflated, obviously, because he ran so much. But again, mobile quarterbacks help the running game. And so I agree with you. I think in a redraft league, it is Josh Jacobs or David Montgomery that's going to be the most likely to be the rookie with the barring injury or something else happening. One of those two is probably going to be your fantasy rookie of the year for a running back.
Sometimes I just need to take time to think about things more, and I know the Bears really like Mike Davis, and it was a pretty reasonable investment. 3 years, $9 million. Like, that's not that's more than Malcolm Brown money by far. It's not quite, it's not even close to Le'Veon Bell money, but still, I think there was more to that signing than just to draft him to have him be a change of pace back at $3 million per season.
I agree with that.
But they did trade up for Montgomery, too. They said a lot of nice things about Davis, then they traded up and took a running back.
Yeah, but the concern that Field's saying is that even if, from their point of view, if they're like, we like Davis and we like Montgomery and obviously we like Cohen, so if it's a running back by committee where they feel like they've got three guys that can be productive for him, it's great for the Bears. It's not good for us.
Devin Singletary went with the very next pick. So the Bills have now added, no joke, I think, what, five running backs this offseason. Devin Singletary went to Florida Atlantic.
I am rooting for every Bills running back except one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know who it
Devin
is.
Singletary, go for it.
Florida Atlantic, obviously coached by Lane Kiffin. Stupid, crazy production. Tiny guy, but Mike, this guy found the end zone as much as any player in college football last year.
Yeah, no doubt. Also had one of the best broken tackle rates. Again, not super fast. Ran a 4.66, a little disappointing, but 5'7", 203, size isn't quite there. But yeah, he's an impressive specimen for sure. I had him as a top four back on my board. Short term, though, where are the touches? Because I know you want to talk about LeSean McCoy here in a second, Matthew, but they also signed
Use
Frank Gore.
Proper name, please.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'll let you handle that. TJ Yeldon is there as well. I know they want to run the football, and maybe somebody gets cut, but, I mean, they just committed to McCoy again after the draft. Frank Gore didn't sign on there to stand on the sideline. He's going to play some sort of role, and we'll see. They signed Yeldon to a two-year deal, so I'm sure he'll be involved as well. So I just have a hard time short-term seeing touches, but Singletary, maybe he's their lead back or feature back in 2020, so more dynasty value
this
certainly than
like
season long.
This feels like a total value pick for the Bills.
I agree.
Yeah,
Matthew,
I agree.
What say,
well, let's see what happens with LeSpoiler McCoy.
Tell me more about this LeSpoiler McCoy.
Yeah, so look, there's a very good chance he's going to be LeSpoiler McCut very soon because he's due $6 million this year on a team that's going nowhere at the moment. Listen, there's some nice pieces there with Buffalo, but you know they're it's still a rebuilding process there for the Bills, and so be interesting. If you guys missed this over the weekend, LeSean McCoy basically spoiled the Avengers, a plot point of the Avengers. And so don't go on his Twitter handle. He sent like three different tweets about it. And, you know, and I hate that. I think that's incredibly selfish and incredibly unaware of the people around you because it is the Avengers endgame movie is 10 years in the making. People have not only waited 10 years for the movie, they've watched 21 movies prior to Avengers Endgame, and to just and all the pre-release marketing is all about don't spoil the endgame. You know, Thanos demands your silence, hashtag all. So it's just, I don't know. I found it to be incredibly selfish and unaware of LeSpoiler McCoy, and not a guy that I was particularly a fan of prior. But this just added to it. So anyway, give me any Bills running back besides besides McCoy this year. But it's interesting, right? Gore's not going to handle a full workload here. And Yeldon seems more like a situational back, although we have seen him at times.
Yeldon's the guy that I'm not even sure to make the team.
Right.
So like maybe one of these guys is playing elsewhere.
So the point is right, if Yeldon may or may not make the team there and Gore is not a guy that can handle a full workload, they want to run the ball, obviously, not only because of the weather, but because Josh Allen, the passing game is still evolving here. And obviously, Allen himself is mobile as well. So I don't know, if you squint, you could potentially see some redraft value for Devin Singletary this year. It would take some doing.
Yeah, it would take
some. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Let's go to New England, stay in the division. Damian Harris out of Alabama, an outstanding recruit coming out of Kentucky 3 years ago, had a very good career at Alabama, the second Crimson Tide back drafted. He goes to the Patriots, though, with the 87th pick. Patriot depth chart now includes, of course, Sony Michel, James White, Rex Burkhead, and not that this guy's going to have any carries, but Brandon Bolden, who's a very good special teams player for them. Mike, log jam type situation here. Do we think Damian Harris has any value? Is this like Singletary? 2020, talk to us again.
Absolutely, unless maybe Sony Michel goes down. I mean, we'll see what they do with Rex Burkhead and if he maintains a role, which he's had a very specific role over the past two seasons. It's really tricky to figure out, but it's hard to justify drafting him with anything other than maybe your last pick as maybe a, some sort of handcuff, but it's tough. I mean, he's obviously a very reliable player. He didn't fumble at all. He has good size. He actually outsnapped Josh Jacobs last year at Alabama. Yeah, so they really liked good. Him a lot. So, he's an interesting prospect for sure. You love the landing spot, but right now it's hard to see him touching the ball early in the season.
And one thing I'll say about this pick, people are wondering why draft Damian Harris when you have all these players already at running back. Remember last year at the beginning of the season when Sony Michel did not play and it felt like the Patriots offense was missing any kind of thumper that could handle the football 18, 20, 22 times a game as a running back? This is their answer, right? Because it wasn't going to be Rex Burkhead. We saw it last year. That wasn't him. You know it's not James White. I think that we know that the Patriots are going to want to run the football. They're one of the few teams that can actually stay committed to the run and be effective offensively. That's where I think Damian Harris fits into this equation. And Sony Michel, listen, there were some teams that had him off their draft board last year for knee issue that he dealt with at Georgia. If this is insurance plus talent.
Yeah, and also you sort of think about this Patriots offense as it sort of morphs as Tom Brady, another year older, Rob Gronkowski.
I'm not so sure about that part.
What?
You don't Brady think being older?
He may not be. He stopped time. Tom Brady has the time stone.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible. I would not put that past him. But look, as Tom Brady, in theory, gets another year older, no Rob Gronkowski here, you could see maybe sort of a morphing of the Patriots offense. That's one of the great things that Bill Belichick has done over the years is adapted his offense and adapted his team to what he has on the field. And so you could see maybe a more run-heavy approach this year, and they've added some wide receivers, which we'll get into in a minute here. So, yeah, I mean, look, he's a late round flyer in super deep leagues at the moment, but it's the Patriots. It also wouldn't shock me if, you know, nothing shocks me with the Patriots. And like he could become their starter and score 15 touchdowns. Like you never know with New England, but at the moment it feels like he is clearly behind Sony Michel and James White on the depth chart.
And they did balance out the offense last year. They had been pass heavy for so long, so they've already been pointed that direction towards a more balanced or even leaning towards the run game.
A couple more really quickly, Stefania. Let's get in on Bryce Love, fourth round pick out of Stanford from Washington. Obviously would have been drafted much sooner if not for an ACL injury late in his college career. Do we expect this player to, is this a red shirt season coming for Bryce Love in DC?
I think it could be, no matter how much optimistically he tries to spin it. And the ACL wasn't the only worry for teams. This is a kid who was injured quite a bit at Stanford, and especially his senior year, which, you know, he had a down year relative to his junior year that got everyone's attention when he was a Heisman chatter. But in his senior year, would come in and out of games, had an ankle injury that seemed to linger, had a number of soft tissue injuries, then tore his ACL in December, had surgery by Dr. James Andrews. And when there were the medical rechecks in April, you know, kids who have had surgeries or procedures go back for the medical rechecks, there was some concern about where he was on the recovery scale at that time. And so there were definitely teams who downgraded his status going into the draft. A training camp, he'll be 8 months removed. We know that typically with running backs, it takes a little bit longer. And you have to think, especially with the Redskins' history of running backs who've had injuries, there's not going to be a move to rush him out there. Consider this. Darius Geist tore his ACL last year, preseason as a rookie, had surgery, Dr. Andrews, down in Pensacola. Subsequent infection delayed his rehab. The good news is he appears to be on track for training camp, so they'll hopefully get him this year. But you don't know until you see it what you get. Chris Thompson, Adrian Peterson, both with injuries last year. I have to believe Washington wanted to add the depth at value because they know what it's like to lose running backs to injury, but I would not be counting on Bryce Love to be super productive this year.
It just feels weird to me that Darius Geis, who was hurt, Chris Thompson, who's also often hurt, they draft a guy in Bryce Love who is currently hurt, and then Adrian Peterson was a sophomore when you were a senior in high school, wasn't he, Matthew?
Yeah, and he's been hurt in his career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, what this says is the Redskins, they're on brand. Right? I mean, this is a guy that fits into the team culture. Like, it's exciting. Like, they're going to have the running back meetings in the training room.
Right. In the ice tubs. And
the ice tubs are all going to, it's be easy for the running backs coach to come in there and talk about the upcoming thing. Look, I think this is you mentioned Field that he probably healthy. He would have gone a lot earlier. That would have been the expectation here. So Love, who's a nice pass catcher. I think he's depth behind Chris Thompson. I think this was one of those picks where it's just like they had an extra fourth. They thought about, hey, let's just best player available. And this is something about sort of more building towards the future and building depth, and candidly, potentially a Chris Thompson replacement down the road than it is necessarily anyone that's going to have redraft value this year
could
in the near
Adrian
future.
Peterson replacement. It could be, I mean, anybody could be replaced a year from now from the Redskins. And we got to see what Darius Geis becomes as a player once he actually gets healthy. Really quickly,
awesome.
Matthew, one last player that you want to mention, Darwin Thompson, Utah State. The guy looks like he's huge, like sculpted.
Yes.
You like him, though, as a potential sleeper in Kansas City.
Yeah, he's a bit of a smaller guy, but yeah, he's really put together and he's fast as hell. You think about what he did at Utah State, 7.9 yards per touch, 16 touchdowns, hyper efficient here. And they just, I don't know. I think this is from their Chiefs area scout Trey Kozel.
Trey Kozel, BC legend.
Right. And so he just this is a quote he gave about an interview about why they picked Thompson. Just said, you know, he's almost a little bit of a change of pace from what we have, which is nice. He's obviously a little bit undersized, but in terms of his twitch and his burst, kind of that change of pace guy that can make moves in space. He's a big play threat. Always was a big play threat for them at Utah State. It's a little bit different than what we had, so it gives us a little bit of a different dimension in terms of the passing game and guys who are going to operate out in space as well. And then you sort of think about an Andy Reid offense, which is so explosive, and they may need some more playmakers here, and we'll get into that in a second as well. So Carlos Hyde, who averaged just 3.3 yards per carry last season, turns 29 in September, and Damian Williams, who's never been a feature back over the course of a season. Just listen, you're just looking at various opportunities, and is he somebody that I target in a redraft league? No. Deeper league, maybe he's a late round flyer in a dynasty league. I just think he's an interesting name to put on people's radar because of his talent and going to an Andy Reid offense where there's suddenly a little bit more opportunity than we thought a while ago.
Mike, let's do some speed dating. Sometimes when you don't draft a player, it means good things for other players. Specifically, I'm thinking about Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones in Tampa Bay. Just one offensive player drafted by the Bucs. It was a late wide receiver.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Ronald Jones was second round pick last year, was super young. So he's still, you know, there's still hope for him. He was undersized, maybe develops a little bit. And the reports out of Tampa have been positive so far, though. Bruce Arians is talking to Peyton Barber. So they seem content with that 1-2 punch. But, Barber was not, he was ninth in carries last year. Do you realize that ninth in carries was still not a good fantasy asset? So Jones is the guy I would be taking that late round flyer on.
Marlon Mack in Indianapolis seems to have this backfield not to himself because Jordan Wilkins and Nyheim Hines are there, but no big powerful back added by Indy.
Yeah, I have Mack pushing for 1,500 scrimmage yards, and I have him over 10 touchdowns. He had 10 last year, so he's a top 20 option for me.
Surprised to see the Dolphins eschew running back this year in the draft.
Yeah,
Kenyon Drake's going in the final year of his contract. Kalen Ballage, third round pick last year.
Ooh,
but
don't say anything bad about Kalen Ballage. Don't.
Yeah. Bellagio, extremely
the
poor.
Bellagio.
Yeah.
The Bellagio.
I got nothing. I'm just saying, I would have thought, yeah.
Yeah, he struggled really badly in college. I'm not a fan. Obviously,
stop.
Matthew is. Kenyon Drake is the much better player.
Stop.
Good passing down option. So, but nonetheless, both of those guys will get a shot with Miles Gaskin. We'll see. They took him late, so we'll see. That's a wide open depth chart, but I would put my money strongly on Kenyon Drake.
We need to take a break, but we have some exciting news on the back end.
Fantasy, you're in the 06010.
All right, we're back. And Matthew said this. He teased it over the weekend. So I was in Nashville. Mike and Stefania were here in Connecticut. Matthew was in a lot of different places. Tell us more.
So before we get there, I want to say we're about ready to talk about a minor point in the Avengers Endgame movie. If you do not want to hear anything at all about the Avengers Endgame movie, you haven't seen it yet, you don't want to, we're not going to spoil anything of the plot, but we will talk about one small piece of the movie that will not ruin the movie for you.
Yep.
But if you don't want to hear anything at all about the movie, Daniel Dopp, when he is done with this recording, will tell us right here, you should skip to
49 minutes and 45 seconds.
There. So the number that the time on the podcast that Daniel Dopp just told you, skip to that point to avoid any spoiler talk. Now, with that out of the way, yes, people have been asking me on Twitter.
Is it true?
Did I just see you in Avengers Endgame? Yes, that is me. I am a cast member of Avengers Endgame. I am in the MCU. I'm a member of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It is very cool.
Now, was this planned or did you just like walk onto the set and just stick your head in?
We can peel back some layers here.
Yes, we can.
There was a time last season when you stepped away for a few days. We got many questions. Is Matthew sick of field? well, probably true, but that's not mutually exclusive. From the
right. That was not
actually
the reason for that particular absence.
Right,
so
you went somewhere and taped.
Yeah. And not even last year, 2 years ago.
I'm
so
sorry,
2017.
Ago, that's right, yeah.
So 2017. And thank you very much for Field, because, in order to do this. So Joe Russo, who, as you know, if you listen to this podcast, is a longtime friend of mine, a hardcore fantasy football player. He has, he's been in our celebrity fantasy league.
Yeah.
Joe and his brother Anthony Russo are the directors of Avengers Endgame and Avengers Infinity War, among many other movies, including the last two Captain America movies. And so at a point in 2017, Joe called me and said, hey, listen, if you want to be in the movie, I got a part that I think you're perfect for. Would you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Yeah, yes, of course, obviously.
No, please,
and,
no.
And I assumed...
camera roll.
He's probably just, you know, pulling my leg, or maybe he means it, but like, he's directing like this massive movie, and they directed both movies back to back. They directed Infinity War and Endgame at the same time to save costs. They still shot for a year. And you know, like a crazy budget, and they're dealing with, you know, every movie star in the universe in these two movies. And so I'm just like, I'm sure he forgot about it or something like that. But literally a week later, I got a call, saying, hey, Matthew, this is Chris Castaldi, first assistant director on the Avengers. I understand you're joining us soon. And,
awesome.
So it was amazing. And so I got down there and, shot the scene and did it for 2 days, and, it was incredible, and needed to get the permission of my bosses here at ESPN, and needed Field to fill in for me. Thank you very much. And Field was like, I'm down. And, it's incredible. I mean, it's a bucket list. It's dream come true. It's
honestly,
like,
I was thinking about it. Like, I don't even know if you can call that a bucket list item. Like, bucket list things are typically
reasonable.
I
want
to go
yeah.
to Africa for one time on a safari.
Right.
I want to go skydiving.
I want to be an NFL like, center, right? Like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, it is life achievement. It is dreams come true. It is
very
pinch
cool.
me. Like, it's like, and then you're, and so, you know, and we'll get into this more. And I will, by the way, I will write about this in detail for my
yeah.
love-hate article in August. So, like, there's some stuff that I can't talk about just yet. And follow me on social media if you don't already, because there'll be some, I'll have some behind-the-scenes footage and some fun stuff that we shot that I can finally share. But the toughest part is I shot this 2 years ago, and I haven't been able to talk about it.
You
like, literally, like, 10 people in the world knew about this.
So you can take that sigh of relief now. There's just so much stress off your back. You're just
well, because there's a couple things, right? So first off, you're like, you shoot it, and you don't know if your scene's going to get cut or not, right? Mm. Like, I didn't think it was, because it's a pretty important scene, but you never know, right? And I had like 6 lines that
sure.
I shot,
yep.
and it wound up being 4 lines made it into the movie. I'm only on screen for one of them, so you have to sort of listen closely for my voice. For some reason, Joe Russo chose to put the camera on the movie stars instead of me in the
so
scene.
Selfish,
so
man.
Weird.
Yeah.
So weird. These big famous movie stars that everyone came to see, as opposed to the fantasy guy. But anyway, so you're worried that the movie doesn't, that your scene doesn't get cut, and then you're worried like, I'm up against, you know, real actors, like amazing actors, real
yeah.
movie stars in every sense of the word. And you're like, oh God, am I? And the people on social media have been so incredibly nice, and I've heard nothing but, you know, hey, you were really good, and you know,
you were the star of the film.
Well, no, I don't know about that, but yeah, but I did one of two things. Either people thought I was very good and I fit into the scene, or they didn't notice me, which is also like a huge compliment,
right?
I mean, it's a little bit. Obviously, you're there to see, you know, Iron Man and Thor and, you know, all the Avengers. And so, you know, anyway, the fact that it's been. I'll just talk about it forever.
Thank
you,
everyone.
It's super
very
cool.
Go watch the movie. If you haven't already, you're one of very few, because I believe it's had the largest opening weekend ever
in history.
Box off history.
$1.2 billion
Are you retiring?
Worldwide.
Like, how much of that do you see, Matthew?
Well, I just want to point out that there were 21 movies in the MCU
right.
prior to me showing up, and then one with me. And yeah. only one of them has had a worldwide box office of $1.2 billion in their opening weekend.
Yeah, but I want to know, what percentage do you get of that $1.2 billion, being that, like, you know, it's
right.
sort of a big deal.
You got this cup of water right here.
I mean, candidly, not that much. 15%.
Okay. Yeah,
I mean, like, seriously. Like,
okay. All right, let's move along here. We got a ton of stuff to get to. Matthew has to get to a TV show taping. Let's get to these wide receivers, and we'll try to do so in
And
relative-
go see Avengers. Here's right. The last thing I will say. If you haven't seen Avengers, or you're going to see it again and you missed me, this is a non-spoiler point. At some point in the movie, there is a sequence that takes place in New York City. And I am in it. They start in New York City. They go to somewhere else. They come back to New York City. The second time they are in New York City, I am in that sequence. So that's where you should sort of heads up.
There you have it. Let's get to the wide receivers, and we head to Baltimore first, who overhauled their offense. We're going to talk about two wideouts, but we'll start with Hollywood Brown. Marquise is his real first name, Stefania. Unbelievable explosiveness, however. Also a major red flag. He's got a Lisfranc issue in his foot.
Yeah, or he had one.
Had one.
Ooh. Well, yeah, if you saw when he injured it, it was sort of the way that we're seeing Lisfranc injuries happen more commonly now. It used to be if a guy fell on your foot and it buckled, that was the mechanism. Now it's you're seeing it in speed guys, which you didn't used to. And it's like their cleat catches when they make a twisting move and it doesn't release and it shears through the middle of their foot. And obviously you need the middle of your foot to be able to advance yourself when you're running. If you have an unstable injury, it requires surgery. That ended up being the case for him. Dr. Bob Anderson operated on Marquise Brown in January. And you have to be in a boot for up to 3 months after that surgery, which is why at the combine he was unable to participate in anything. But the progression after that, it's slow, but it's fairly straightforward. And the expectation is that he will be cleared to do some type of activity in OTAs, should be a full go by training camp. The obvious question is, this is a kid who is drafted for speed. Speed is critical to his game because he is small and slight, but it's that track level speed that he has. The good news is that he should be able to get that back. I think what you have to be careful of is it can take a year or so to get back to that pre-injury level. So you may not see that right away out of him. And I think people expecting he'll be cleared by training camp, he'll be a full go this season and he'll be the Marquise Brown you drafted. Maybe not. You know, it takes guys a little while. And combine that with him adapting to the NFL, and you may not get that pre-injury guy until you get into next year. Where he landed is a different that's a different issue altogether, and I'll let you guys talk about
that. Yeah, I was going to say, so he goes to Baltimore. Sort of some good news, bad news here. Hollywood Brown, incredibly explosive. He goes to Baltimore, though, where throwing was a massive issue for Lamar Jackson last year. Mike, I'm going to have him sort of lumped in with Miles Boykin.
Mm-hmm.
Third-round pick out of Notre Dame, who had a really good final season with the Fighting Irish. So, Stefania gave you the injury information. How do you project Hollywood Brown in his first season with the Ravens?
Well, first I'll say this. The last time the Ravens drafted a super fast receiver with drop and durability issues in round one, it didn't go so well. That was Breshad Perriman. Hopefully this one will go better. But here's the thing. Brown, again, obviously he's super fast, good prospect. He's probably their number one receiver, right? Right away. They just don't have anything there. And that could be the case for Boykin as potentially the two with Willie Snead in the slot. So I have Brown at 46 catches, 681 yards, 3 touchdowns. I have Boykin right now at 30 catches for 425 and 2 scores. That makes neither of them fantasy starters. I mean, maybe one of them has a chance to get in there. But again, this should be the run heaviest team in the NFL. I have Lamar Jackson with 15 passing touchdowns this season. That's it. And so that's a big concern for me. Not only this year, but potentially 2 years from now, 3 years from now, at least till Jackson can throw it better, they're more balanced, or they change quarterbacks.
Massive, critical year ahead in Baltimore, Matthew, for Lamar Jackson. If he can't start throwing the football much more effectively, I don't want to say they're going to have seller's remorse of Joe Flacco, but it's going to raise some question marks.
Well, and that was the question mark for Lamar Jackson coming in. Like, no one questioned his athletic ability. It was just like, how effective can he be as a passer at the NFL level? And so, yeah, I mean, you're actually more bullish. Believe it or not, you're more bullish on Hollywood Brown than I am, because I think the way he profiles is as a DeSean Jackson type, like just fantasy wise, like even if Jackson were a more polished passer and it were a more balanced offense, he strikes me as more of a big play guy that will have some big weeks and some, you know, different weeks, as opposed to a guy that would be a consistent fantasy starter, you know, and so especially as a young player. And so I just think you're going to be it's going to be tough to find consistent fantasy value anywhere in the passing game of Baltimore.
They had two good players last year, Michael Crabtree and John Brown. Like good established NFL players who had zero fantasy value.
John Brown was when Joe Flacco was under center, John Brown was a fantasy asset last year.
He's making $9 million bucks a year now. So my point is that there are players who have played with Lamar Jackson that were zapped in terms of fantasy. It's going to take some time. Love Hollywood Brown's upside, but it might take a little bit of time. It might not take as much time for N'Keal Harry, Arizona State wide receiver, 32nd pick overall. And in terms of landing spots, it's about as good as it can get, right? Tom Brady, most accomplished quarterback of all time. Patriots had as much of a need for a wide receiver. They get N'Keal Harry, Mike, who also joins Demaryius Thomas in terms of recent wideout help.
Yeah, a little slower with some separation concerns, but he is probably going to play inside, use a lot. You know, he could play inside, outside, using the short to intermediate area, which works perfect because that's kind of the game that Tom Brady has played in recent years. But you touched on it. They have a big problem at, in terms of health and depth at wide receiver. So he's a shot to play every down week one. I mean, he really could get to that point. So I have him at 47 catches, 639 receiving, and 5 touchdowns. That makes him a fringe top 50 option. Certainly, he should be drafted in the late rounds of 10-team and 12-team leagues.
If you had a draft today, who are you drafting first, N'Keal Harry or Demaryius Thomas?
Definitely Harry, because I think Thomas ends up on PUP. We'll see, but it's going to be hard to imagine himself.
You don't work next to Stephania Bell every day for 12 years without learning that Achilles injuries are not good. They are tough, and they are hard to come back from. And so Demaryius Thomas is somebody that, again, to your point, may not make the team, or if it may not break camp with the team, might start on the physical and able to perform list. So N'Keal Harry's got a very good chance to be right there. And just the fact that the Patriots drafted a wide receiver in the first round should tell you something.
They've done so since the late Terry Glenn. Rest in peace. 99 was the year they drafted him in the first round. It's been a long time now. Part of it's because they've had so many good players at that position. The track record has not been amazing for Bill Belichick. It's been a bit of a blind spot in the draft. Now, they've had some absolute home runs with guys like Deion Branch and David Givens. They've also had some notable whiffs like
Aaron Dobson,
Chad Jackson and Aaron Dobson and other players that have not been nearly as effective. The difference between some of those guys and this is that they need N'Keal Harry. Like, they need him right away.
And the other thing that you can sort of see is, again, no Rob Gronkowski, right? And so you think about N'Keal Harry and Demaryius Thomas, and one thing both guys have in common? Size.
Yep.
They're both big red zone targets, potentially. So again, with Demaryius Thomas, a big question mark here. Gronk no longer on the team. N'Keal Harry has a chance for fantasy relevance immediately. A
couple more here. Let's go to San Francisco, where they drafted Deebo Samuel 36th and Jalen Hurd 67th. Could not have two more dissimilar players. Samuel, 5'11", 215. Guy is quick as a jitterbug coming out of South Carolina. Jalen Hurd started his career at Tennessee, Mike, oversized running back. He ends up at Baylor for one more season. He's a wide receiver. He's still really big. What do you make of these two additions to that San Francisco offense?
Yeah, I think Samuel has a shot to play a pretty big role out of the gate. You have Dante Pettis, second rounder last year. Marquise Goodwin's going to be in there as probably a situational deep threat. And then Samuel could be right in that mix as anywhere from 1 to 3 on the depth chart. So I have him at 45 catches, over 500 yards, 3 touchdowns. And then Hurd probably going to be more of a versatile offensive weapon, if you will. He'll be in the backfield. He'll play, you know, he'll get some work at tight end. According to Kyle Shanahan, could play outside a little bit. So he'll be all over the formation. Not going to have much fantasy value, I don't think, but will be valuable to that team. So if I'm taking a late-round flyer here, it's going to be on Samuel.
I would agree with that. I think the key word, though, in what you just said is if. I mean, because you think they've got George Kittle in the slot, right? They, in theory, they have Marquise Goodwin, and whether they see him more situational or as an every-down player, we've heard both out of San Francisco about Marquise Goodwin, right? And people forget, Dante Pettis had some really nice splashes last year. We don't have a large sample size of Jimmy Garoppolo, who we expect to be healthy to start the season here. Stephania Bell, you're a crazy 49ers fan. What do you make of all this?
I am crazy, and I am a 49ers fan. I think that... To me, what I saw happening here is just what they did with the running backs, and that is a result of what happened last year. San Francisco made big changes in the offseason, not only in terms of the players they added, but they changed out their medical staff. They are intent on attacking the injury problem that they had, and part of the way you attack it is with depth. So while everyone's trying to figure out how these guys are going to slot into the offense, and what their roles are going to be and why did they have so many people here, you have to look at a team that lost their quarterback and their starting running back to ACL injuries before the season ever got underway, basically, at least with McKinnon. And now they are making sure that they have depth everywhere, and people like Jalen Hurd to me is sort of the Swiss Army knife that Shanahan can do anything with. Deebo Samuel gives them an alternative to Marquise Goodwin, who is electric with speed but had his own injury issues as much as he tried to play through last season. George Kittle played with broken rib cartilage, and he was the healthiest pass catcher on the field. So I think this is all about depth, and I think it's too early to say how it's all going to shake out.
Plenty of depth now in tow for San Francisco, certainly a team that needs to win a whole bunch more games this year to start meeting expectations. A.J. Brown, Ole Miss, perhaps the best Ole Miss player on that offense, and they had a bunch of guys drafted. Ends up going 51st overall to the Titans. Mike, guy that certainly has an opportunity, because I don't think Tennessee, a lot of the guys that we've expected to make that leap for them of late have not quite done so in the wide receiver group.
Yeah, Brown is good size, decent speed, ran just under a 4.5. And I think he's positioned for a pretty big role in this offense. You have Davis there, of course. Delanie Walker will be back. And then it's Brown against Humphreys, kind of, I think, for that number two wide receiver job. So I have him at 50 catches, 625 receiving, and four touchdowns. It's going to make him well worth a late round flyer. It's going to be probably hard to get on the flex radar, though, because they want to run the ball. It's going to be the Derrick Henry show, I think, at least early on this season. So it's going to make it tough. But again, for me, Brown, fine to take late.
All right. This made me so sad. I love A.J. Brown as a player. Like, he was probably my favorite coming out of college of the wide receiver class this year. And to wind up in Tennessee, where, to your point, it's going to be a run-first offense with a questionable quarterback, let's be honest. I just like, ah, sad. I was hoping for better for A.J. Brown. I mean, look, crazy talented player and just going to an offense that, and also has Adam Humphreys and, Taywan Taylor. Bye. Mm-hmm. By Taywan Taylor.
Adios.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, sad.
A little bit more excited about J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Played at Stanford, big physical wide receiver, awesome in the red zone. He goes to the Eagles, Mike, opposite of Alshon Jeffrey. Going to be hard to find out which one is more dangerous in the red zone.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, he's going to have a hard time producing this season. I have him only with 20 catches right now because you have Jeffrey, you have DeSean Jackson now, you have Nelson Aguilar in the slot. It sounds like he's going to stick. And you have Zach Ertz, and they want to get Dallas Goedert more involved as well. Yep. So I just don't see enough touches for Arcega-Whiteside this season. But
especially because when they get
in
close, they're handing it to Jordan Howard like every game.
Yeah, right. 20 exactly. touchdowns. 20 touchdowns. That's your number. Yep. You're over under. Yeah. Yep. So I love him long term. Great fit. Good in contested balls. He's tough, but not in 2019.
You know what? And it's interesting. They have some real nice depth there in Philadelphia. Like they have this kid named Mac Hollins, who I absolutely love, Mac Hollins can't seem to get on the field there.
It might be time for you to quit Mac Hollins, right?
Yeah. I don't know if he'll make it. He might stick us to five, but
Mac Collins deserves a shot in the NFL. I believe he does. It doesn't look like it's going to be with Philadelphia, though, which is unfortunate here.
Paris Campbell gets his shot in the NFL. He goes to Indianapolis Colts at the end of the second round, 59th overall. The Colts now have T.Y. Hilton, Devin Funchess, at wide receiver, followed by Campbell. Mike, this guy, plenty of speed at Ohio State.
Yeah, no doubt. Ran a 4.31. That was best among receivers at the combine. Averaged a 4.6 average depth of target last year, so he's used really in the short area. I think he'll play in the slot here in this offense. I think it's a good landing spot for him. Maybe lacks a little bit of upside, especially near the goal line because of his size and his role underneath. But guys, the player I think of here, Randall Cobb. Feels like Randall Cobb.
I like it.
Yeah, right in the slot. Oh, everything's close to the line of scrimmage. So I think, I think if you're Randall Cobb for an Andrew Luck offense, a guy that throws short a lot, I think it's a pretty good fit and could lead to some fantasy value.
I guess my question is, I agree with you that it's a pretty good landing spot for his dynasty prospects. I don't love his redraft value
really?
This year. You do? Well,
yeah.
Just think about
he'd be their number two right away.
I don't know. They signed Devin Funchess. They spent $13 million on Devin Funchess.
The Jags spent how much on Moncrief last year? Or 1 year deal?
I understand. So we'll see. But this is an offense that is going to throw to their tight end, which they have previously. Mm-hmm. So you've got Ebron and Doyle there. Obviously, T.Y. Hilton is going to command a large target share. So I really think it's between Funchess and Paris Campbell. And so Funchess, who I think's got a better chance to get into the end zone, obviously with his size. I don't know. I just feels like that short intermediate stuff to me, that's T.Y. Hilton. You want T.Y. Hilton on those slants against those linebackers. And I like Paris Campbell quite a bit as a player. And I'm sure there'll be some nice games, and if Funchess gets hurt, sure. I'm nervous that I don't know how many balls that are going to be around. Look, it is a pass-heavy offense, obviously, and Luck's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Playing on the turf will help. I don't know. I just felt like I feel better about his dynasty prospects in Indy than I do about his redraft prospects, beyond, a wide receiver 4 or 5 with a little bit of upside.
We just talked about his teammate a moment ago, A.J. Brown, but his D.K. Metcalf, who was one of the stars of the pre-draft process in terms of his physical ability, looked great, literally without a shirt on. He goes to the Seahawks at the back end of the second round, 64th overall. Stefania, part of the reason why he fell is because he's got some significant injury concerns. And, oh, by the way, not to be lost during this draft weekend, Doug Baldwin, according to Adam Schefter, is at least considering retirement, so major injury news there as well.
I know, a bit of a surprise on the Doug Baldwin front because we heard he had the off-season surgeries, but there was sort of the impression that he was progressing back nicely from them, and you thought he'd be around when the team picked up their activities again. So this news is certainly a bit of a surprise, but Doug Baldwin, just to remind folks, only played 11 snaps in the first game, missed the subsequent two games. So 13 games all year, only 5 touchdowns all season. Had a couple standout games, but never was really quite himself. And so maybe the injury is ultimately taking a toll. Doug Baldwin, a smart guy who's got a lot of other opportunities if he decides to move on, but it does leave the Seahawks in need of a receiver. So they pick up DK Metcalf, who we all know about the picture and the body and how amazing he looks with his shirt off.
Basically by doppelganger.
And actually, Field, you know, I don't know. But here's the thing. He's a little taller, but other than that, it's hard to tell you apart.
Pretty much.
DK Metcalf put on a show running a 4.33 40 and a vertical jump that put him in the top 10 percentile of wide receivers. But this was one case where the eyeball test and some of the functional scores actually match up. When you see him run, he looks really good running in a straight line, explosive, fast, but he's a big guy who's very muscular and built, but rather stiff. And to that point, his three cone and shuttle drills, he rated in the bottom 5 percentile among wide receivers. So mobility for him when it comes to lateral mobility or agility is a question and a concern. And I think that combined with the fact that he had neck surgery in December, which definitely caused some teams to be concerned about him, that ended his last season. He's been cleared for all activity. But when you have a history of neck surgery coming into the league, there are some teams who just do not want to take a chance on that. And he also had a broken foot that ended his freshman season early. So concerns about not just overall durability, but the last injury that brings him into the league, as well as his general mobility, how will he hold up? But he may have found the right fit in terms of Seattle and what they would ask him to do as a receiver.
Well, certainly a lot to unpackage there. Doug Baldwin, we wish him well in his recovery, but it sounds like there is a chance we won't see him. Mike, let's just sort of start with the DK Metcalf side. Obviously very intriguing because of the physical stature, but there are some limitations in his game.
Yeah, no doubt, but a good fit here in Seattle, right? Who's named the best long ball throwers in the NFL, right? Russell Wilson is on that list. We saw that last year. He can drop it in there to him. So they may just say, especially as a rookie,
run
stand on the perimeter, run straight, and you're going to get maybe 4 targets a game, and you know all it's going to take is to catch 1 or 2, and he's going to have a huge fantasy presence. So I like him as a DFS option here in 2019. Yeah. You know, obviously, if Doug Baldwin does not play, Metcalf will play more, but even still, I think he's always going to be a 50-55 catch guy with a cap ceiling. And, you know, I probably should have been lower on him than I was back in combine season, but I'm starting to understand that he probably is limited long term, but he does have big upside as that vertical threat. He could be a dominant big downfield presence.
And let's face it, given how well Seattle runs the ball and their offensive line, like, it just sets up for play action just so easily, right? Just like pound it, play action, boom.
That's what they
take
did last
a shot
year
to DK Metcalf. Right. And lock it as well. And so I would agree with your assessment there.
There are a ton of other wide receivers we could get into. I know Mike likes, for example, Deontay Johnson, who goes to Pittsburgh. You may have noticed we did not discuss Mecole Hardman, who was a second-round pick of the Chiefs. The reason is this. Tyreek Hill, as we know, a very disturbing audio tape has been released. The investigation surrounding he, his fiance, and their 3-year-old son has been reopened. I believe that there is a chance we'll have some clarity on Tyreek Hill's status at some point soon, at which point, of course, we will have a much better ability to address Mecole Hardman's value from fantasy. For right now, obviously, congratulations to Mecole on a lifelong dream achieved. And, you know, just quickly on Tyreek Hill, all you can think about is the kid there. And we hope that he is safe and that he gets the proper support that he obviously deserves. In terms of tight ends, a very robust tight end class this year. 2 studs from Iowa drafted. This is going to be really rapid here, Mike, because typically tight ends do not make a major mark as a rookie. TJ Hockenson, 8th overall. Guy is an absolute stud. Won the Mackey Award last year. Really just an absolute baller.
Yeah, we're going to play a lot of snaps in this Detroit offense, but they're going to run the ball a lot. And again, this is all you really need to know about all these guys. You can put it in one stat. Over the last decade, there has been 1 top 10 fantasy tight end. It was Evan Ingram, who was just focused on playing wide receiver for a very injury-plagued Giants offense. It's very unlikely he's going to be a tight end 1 or any of these other guys, so it makes it very hard to even consider drafting him in a 2019 season. Dynasty, though, we love him.
Absolutely. Matthew, how about his teammate Noah Fant, who lands in Denver?
Yeah, I think he's got a chance at a little bit more immediate fantasy value, right? Because Hockenson should help with the run game, obviously, you know, in terms of, he's a nice blocker there. And Jesse James is well paid there, but Noah Fant goes to a quarterback in Joe Flacco who actually likes throwing to the tight end.
He does, yeah.
You know, since 2015. He completes 74% of his passes when targeting tight ends, second only to Matt Ryan over that stretch. Now, we haven't seen any consistent fantasy tight end studs out of Baltimore, but they used a lot of different guys here. So Noah Fant, who's more of a pass catcher than truly a tight end, you think about sort of Evan Ingram or Jordan Reed or some of those guys that are, you know, sort of move tight ends. That's who I think he could be. And so, you know, as he goes into this offense, it's kind of it's potential there, right? Because they've got a bunch of pass. We don't know where Emmanuel Sanders is in terms of his recovery. We saw some flashes from Deshaun Hamilton, Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick here, but that passing game is wide open, especially with a new quarterback. So to me, if there was in PPR, if there was a tight end, a rookie tight end that you were going to draft, Fant is on the, you know, is on the radar of a late flyer. He could certainly be the one. But as we've talked about, rookie tight ends struggled for only Evan Ingram is the guy that's had a top 10 year as a rookie tight end.
Irv Smith Jr. out of Alabama goes to the Vikings at pick number 50. It raises the question as to whether Kyle Rudolph will be with this team next season. But Mike, for now he is. Irv Smith probably going to be a backup, at least to start.
Yeah, Smith doesn't turn 21 till August. That just, on top of everything we just talked about tight ends not making a mark. And I mean, some of these guys come in at 23 years old and it takes a while. I don't think Smith makes any noise in fantasy in the short term.
Matthew, last one here is Jay Sternberger, your favorite tight end in this year's class because of the fact that he went to Texas A&M.
Yeah, I don't know that I would call him my favorite tight end. He's my favorite tight end just as a fan.
You promised me if we talked about him, you were going to draft him in one of your leagues this year, specifically the Celeb League.
I don't think I said that. I think you should pay more attention to
that. You want to talk about a guy you don't even want to draft yourself?
You do like this player, though.
I do like this
player. He goes to Green Bay where there could be a role.
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, Jimmy Graham is on his last legs in here. So, you know, Sternberger, who had 10 touchdown receptions last year in college, ranked second in yards per catch, as among all tight ends in FBS. He scored on 7 of 8 red zone catches in 2018. You think about Aaron Rodgers, who leads the NFL in red zone touchdown passes per game. They did not add a big wide receiver. Like, you know, the Packers did not draft anyone. They didn't add anyone really in free agency. Randall Cobb leaves the team. They haven't brought back Jordy Nelson here, right? So you've got like Dronimo Allison and MVS and,
Jamon Moore.
And Jamon and St. Brown. And like, so, right. So they've got outside of Davante Adams, there's some opportunity there. And it sort of depends on Jimmy Graham in terms of his value this year. But whether Jimmy Graham, you know, however long Jimmy Graham has left in the NFL, I don't think it's that long. And so Sternberger, who is somebody I've watched a lot of because I watch every Texas A&M game, is just a very nice player, very tough, moves well, really great hands. And I think this was a great pick by the Packers. I like him a lot. After the big name tight ends, if you're looking for a dynasty tight end, I think Sternberger is somebody that needs to be on your radar in
all
a
right.
big way.
Four rookie tight ends that all have a chance to make a mark, and many more players are going to be discussed this week as we are here now for the ESPN Fantasy Summit. We always do it the week after the draft. A big thanks in advance to Keith Lipscomb for all of his planning. We're coming back on Thursday to recap the summit. So you'll hear all about it, plenty of video content, and plenty of stuff from the event live on Twitter, etc.
There's new episodes of The Fantasy Show on ESPN Plus. So one will air today talking about the draft. We'll also do an episode of The Fantasy Show after the summit. We'll do our first mock draft of the season, so we'll break that down. There may be a couple of references to the Avengers. Just saying.
Say no more.
There may
no
or may. Not going to say anything more. No spoilers, but there may be some references to the spoilers. Go see Avengers Endgame.
Do it.
I've seen it twice, and I loved it more the second time than the first time, even when I knew everything that was coming. I am telling you, it is an unbelievable movie. And my wife, who is not a huge MCU fan or superhero fan, loved it as well.
That's awesome. Well, again, congratulations to Matthew on a really, really cool thing. Go back and listen to the portion of the podcast if you did not hear it already. Matthew Berry, TMR, on all forms of social media, except for the Fantasy Life app. He's just Matthew Berry there.
Yep.
He's Mike Clay NFL on all forms of social
you
media.
You got it.
I'm at Field Yates. We're back on Thursday, as we said. She's Stefania B87 on Instagram and Stefania _ESPN on Twitter. She's kind of hiding over there.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to see.
We're in a weird studio. She's behind the wall.
Yeah,
poor little Stefania.
We're playing a road game today. We'll talk to you guys on Thursday.
Peace out.